and science on the current time frame, that you include computer science in this for secondary courses as part of that process. We've talked a fair amount about House Bill 1222, the online and blended learning bill, because you all supported that as a board. There is work to be done by the department and the board in partnership with, and the law says it's the board and the department, the administering BOCES, which is currently the Mountain BOCES, and then some nonprofit entities, to prepare a statewide plan for integrating supportive and online blended learning into the educational programs currently being provided by districts. And I should have said this sooner, but I'm working off this implementation document that I know you all have as part of your process. This is something that was around long before I came on board with you all, and I have to tell you, I think it's a quite effective tool for really taking the bills that passed and breaking it down into who has to do what when. So that's what my focus right now is, kind of who significant pieces of work for the department, for your staff, and for you all. And in that context, I highlight the statewide plan for the online and blended learning. I'll highlight House Bill 1234, which requires the department to investigate and review options on state assessments in English, math, science, and social studies, and to include options that would allow districts to select and administer their own. It is was pretty clear in the intent of the legislation that that is to be a contract, and I know the staff is working now to gonna get the RFP in process and all of that. That is a $40,000 contract that somebody will win to do that analysis and that work. That report is due to the Joint Education Committees in December. That bill also requires the department to apply to be part of the Innovative Assessment and Accountability Demonstration Grant Program under ESEA. I'm not the expert. My understanding is you all have been having those conversations anyway, but do know that there is actually a statutory requirement out there now to apply to do that. Please.
I thought it was a choice that we would have.
Not anymore.
Correct. House Bill 1289 is the $1 million grant program I mentioned briefly before. It's around incentives to complete career development. That really doesn't go into full effect until the 17-18 budget year. So you'll see in your implementation document that staff is working on some kind of data collection and those types of issues around it. But the actual grant program doesn't go into effect until the following year. The School Finance Act, I mean, obviously always one of the department's core functions is, of course, to be the distributor of school finance dollars in the state. That will continue. As you all know, this year the school finance bill had some language related to charter schools amended onto it that had been moving forward as a separate bill. It got put into the School Finance Act. I thought you might be interested in some of the specifics of that. A couple of the components that are worth highlighting. One, if a charter school is an institute charter school within a school district, so it's located in a school district, and that school district said, yes, we're going to have an institute charter school in our school district, the district basically doesn't get to come back and change their mind 10 years later and say, now we want to be in charge of that. So it essentially says that institute charter schools continue to remain accountable to CSI. It also... there's been so much conversation, and I find it endlessly confusing, honestly, about automatic waivers for charter schools. There are certain things that can be automatically waived. This legislation clarifies that one of the things that cannot be automatically waived is the requirement for minimum number of teacher-pupil contact hours. So if a charter school would like to waive that or get some flexibility, they have to come to you as a board, and you have to have that conversation. It's not something that's going to just happen. Charter school networks will now be audited as a single legal entity. So if it's a network of four or five schools, they don't do audits separately on each school. School districts have to provide itemized accounting of central administrative costs if they are asked by charter schools within their district. So right now under the law, districts are allowed to retain a portion of the charter school appropriable revenue for what they call central administrative costs. And this is just saying you have to tell us what those are. You don't get to just say we're holding $10 back or whatever it is. You have to justify that. And then finally, districts have to notify charter schools of available vacant or underused buildings within the district. So those are some of the charter school provisions that got amended on to 1422 that did pass. So those are all now law.
You said available?
Mm-hmm. It does say
that whole phrase.
Districts must notify them of available, vacant, or underused buildings is how the legislation reads.
So that doesn't necessarily allow for a district to be planning. So if it has extra space, but in the next 3 to 5 years, there's a huge development that's going to be selling 200 homes. Do you know what I mean? It sounds like it curtails some of the planning that districts do tend to do sometimes.
I think, Madam Vice Chair, the statutory requirement is only to notify the charter schools of that.
Okay.
So it doesn't, I think, by definition say that a charter school could then go into that space. I mean, I think presumably the regular process kicks in there where they have a conversation about that. But
right.
They have to at least say to charter schools, here are the buildings we have that are vacant or underused.
Okay, fair enough.
The final bill I thought I would highlight again quickly is House Bill 1429, which is the one bill that added 0.5 of an FTE to the department and $44,000. This has to do with AEC's alternative education campuses. It basically updates the criteria to designate a school as an AEC. Before the bill passed, you had to have 95% of students in these high-risk categories. That threshold has now been lowered to 90%. It also gives the department a very kind of specific mandate to work on an ongoing basis with AECs around issues of developing effective methods for measuring their progress in the accountability system. So that is what I wanted to highlight, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Further questions for Ms. Mello? Seeing none, thank you very much, Ms. Mello. We appreciate it. Oh, you do? Yes, Ms. Goh.
Two parts to it. First one is thank you. I want to thank Jennifer for her presence and guidance and late nights and all the typical qualifications of serving in the capital. In line with the charter waiver conversation, just putting a seed of thought for us with our, whether it's part of our priority package or not, but to continue talking about the definition of innovation and how if we're going to or not pursue anything around the Innovation Act, as far as just a thought, what our role is, what kind of recourse there is for the board beyond the very ceiling level role that we have. I just a thought.
Further comments? I think I agree that we probably need to continue to take a look at that particular area and waivers and see where we are. Yeah. Innovation status, that sort of thing. Further questions? Yes.
In conjunction with that, could you dig up that proposed bill that we did not follow through on to use that as a starting point for the wording and see if that, so that sometime over the next 2 or 3 months, the board can talk about that if in fact we want to support something like that. Please.
Mr. Chairman and Vice Chair,
yes.
I'd be happy to do that and to send that to you all.
Okay. All right. Yes, Dr. Shefflin.
I continue to get questions regarding the data privacy bill as to whether or not it covers algorithms. Can you speak to that, or could Marcia? I just need a clear statement. Does that bill address that or not? I don't have clarity.
Board Member Shuffle, given that what you're seeking is absolute clarity, I don't think I'm the right person to answer that question. So I don't know. I can't see behind me.
Marcia, do you have an opinion on that? Excellent.
To the question about algorithms, the bill is very clear that any data that a vendor collects or has in its possession has to be managed in a certain way. It has to be protected, has to be destroyed at the certain times. The word algorithm is just another way to say they've calculated data, or they could have derived it or somehow come up with another data set. So the answer would be yes, it's covered in the bill because the bill talks about data that vendors have. So whether they've just collected it or whether they've calculated it, however they come up with that data, it's covered. I mean, the bill is very clear about that. It just doesn't use the word algorithm.
And how would we know if, I mean, in other words, is there some way to know if that's the case? I mean, is there some review that one could do? Or I don't know how you'd even ensure that that's the case, I guess. Because it's a derivative of the data, right?
Well, I think it would be like any law. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to take a look at what the vendor has, you know, what data they're storing, what they're doing with it. You'd have to go into actually what they're doing, but I mean, you could audit them, I suppose. I think the challenge here is at some point you've got to trust that they're signing the contract, they're agreeing to the requirements, and all of these types of situations are covered within that. So I would suggest that maybe the only thing we could do in addition to reminding them of their obligations under the law would be to point that out to them, that all the data is considered, you know, no matter how they come up with it.
Right. And so would districts be responsible then to audit the practices of the vendors to ensure that they were complying, including the algorithm piece?
Audit is a very large topic in the bill, and it's in there. We're still going through the process of really analyzing exactly what requirements are for each of the districts and for CDE and for vendors. So audit, it's a big part of it. So we're still working on that, so we can give you a little bit more information on that. I think we're planning to come back in the August board meeting and give you more details on the actual implementation plan, so we could add that to it.
Great, thank you.
I did want to add that there are very specific provisions in the bill around what happens if there is a data privacy violation, right? So if a vendor or a researcher does not comply and there's evidence of that, and I understand that's different than what Dr. Shuffle's saying, and that, you know, how do we know they're complying is one set of questions. If we know that they're not, if we know that there has been a problem, there are very specific provisions within the bill around termination of contract, public hearing around that. So the bill is quite specific on that point.
Any further questions of Ms. Mellon? Hearing none? Thank you very much. Okay, let's see. We'll wait and see if Dr. Flores returns here in just a minute. Otherwise, we'll prepare for item 11, which is the CREDO research proposal. So if we want to, staff wants to set up for that. Let's see, who is... Oh, Marcia. Don't try and escape. All right, good. So why don't we if you don't mind, we'll give it just a second here.
It's time to end the meeting because my notebook has
broken.
You out of
it? It's done. It's done all it can do for this meeting. Yes.
Okay, well, we're almost there.
I made it. I like that. It wouldn't do. Oh, I didn't turn it in.
Dr. Flores. So, all right, we'll start with the motion, if we could. Dr. Schroeder.
I move to approve the Credo research proposal.
Is there a second to that motion?
Ms. Goff,
second. Sorry. It's been moved and seconded that the research proposal be approved. So, Commissioner, would you care to start with Ms. Bohannon, or how do you want to organize?
I think Ms. Bohannon just has a few overarching comments just to set the context, and then we can turn it over to Mackie Raymond.
Hello again, everybody.
Talk into your...
As you probably remember, some time ago, the board decided that any research request and proposal needed to come to the state board for approval. So here we are.
One of the many problems with data privacy.
It's all out there, right?
Do you want to strangle that, or?
I do. technology at its best. I do apologize.
Is there an excuse for this, Marcia?
Phone rings in church occasionally. I wouldn't worry too much about it. All right, Marcia, please.
We'll
go ahead.
And also, the data privacy law that we were just talking about has a clause in there that talks about the need to build a process for any research that's going to be requested or whatever. So we have to have an internal research vetting process. So we're currently working on that, and we had one before, but we're working on finalizing that and making sure it's aligned with the bill and that you guys are good with it. So we'll bring that one back to you later. We'll probably at the August board meeting. So we're not going to spend time today talking about the process. What we're going to spend time today on is giving Dr. Raymond an opportunity to explain the research that she's been conducting at the Center for, I got to make sure I get it right, Center for Research and Educational Outcomes, that's Credo, and that's Stanford University. And she's the executive director there, so she is the best person to be able to describe what the value is to Colorado and the methodology, how they protect the data, and that sort of thing. So I'm going to turn it over to her and let her explain that and answer any questions that you guys might have. So, Dr. Raymond.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I have not had a chance to introduce myself to you before now, and so I'd like to start by just telling you a little bit about Credo, the work that we do at Stanford, and the kind of partnership that I have in mind with Colorado. We are not your typical academic research group. We've made a deliberate decision not to pursue tenure-track positions, and the reason for that is because it takes too long to get the answer out. We are incredibly focused on, and exclusively focused on, delivering evidence about policy decisions and program performance to departments of education, boards of education, and state legislatures around the country. We have, for the last 20 years, developed a research style that says there's urgency in giving feedback to policymakers, and there's nobody else in the country that believes that that's a full-time job, but we do. And so we have built a practice over many years, and for the last 8 years, Colorado has been one of our valued partners. We focus on issues of school choice, school performance, and accountability. Those are the three areas that we work on. And as far as Colorado is concerned, we think that Colorado is an essential part of all three of those stories. You have an incredible track record of policymaking in the area of school choice and charter schools. And since we began working with you, we have been privileged to be able to provide you detailed information about how your policies impact students across the state. That's both at the aggregate compared to what students would normally have experienced in traditional public schools, and at the breakout level of student groups that we care about, students like Latinos and Blacks, and students with special education needs. We have a particular methodology that makes it important for us to partner with state departments of education because our counterfactual requires that we compare student-level performance with students in traditional public schools. And so the opportunity to go around and collect data from individual charter schools and individual districts puts us in a position of spending all of our time asking for permission as opposed to spending all of our time getting evidence about how your decisions have worked out. The project that we have come to you about today is an analysis of how charter management organizations are working. I know that you have interest in charter management organizations. You've been a leader in supporting the development of charter networks, and we would like to include Colorado and focus our next study to include you because we think there's an important story to tell. I know that there's concern about allowing any researchers to use data from Colorado, and I'd like to address your concerns directly. We have data partnership agreements with 28 states. We've been collecting data since 2004. We have the highest set of security standards of any academic research group in the country. We consider ourselves best of breed and intend to stay there. We have a security procedure that is equivalent to that is practiced by NASA, by the National Security Administration, by the Centers for Disease Control. We intend to maintain every single level of rigor because as much as privacy is important to you, it's career critical for us. If there's ever a problem with any of our agreements, they all go down, and no one will ever, ever again give us a data agreement. So this is a career-ending moment for us, and so our incentives are completely aligned. I like my work, I'd like to continue my work, and everybody who works with me believes the same thing. Our priority is protecting and securing the data that we are allowed and privileged to have with our state partners. I think there is a balance that we can strike about providing you important feedback. That's what we do. That's part of our partnership. We knock ourselves out every day to give you the most accurate information about the policies and the programs that you enact. And we hope in turn with that, we earn your trust and earn the opportunity to provide you important information for shaping your future decisions. So with that, I'm going to end my comments, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Questions from members of the board? Ms. Rankin?
Is this project that you're doing now, coming to Colorado, is it part of a project that you started in 2013, or is this a new project?
This is a new project. Each project that we do requires that we go and ask for permission again, and the permission only extends to this project and ends at the conclusion of this project.
And how long will that project last?
Well, it was supposed to last 9 months, but it's taken us 8 months to get to the starting line, so I really can't answer that precisely.
About a month?
No. Oh, please don't say that. I think we'll be done by the end of the calendar year, and what we ask of our state partners is permission to hold the data set intact for another 12 months after we release a study. In case we get questions or challenges to our results, then we have the opportunity to go back and check and validate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Flores.
So again, tell us the question. Would you repeat the question that you want to ask in this research?
Certainly. So the question that we're asking is, are students who are enrolled in schools that are part of charter management organizations, CMOs, getting a better education because of affiliation with CMOs than they would normally get if they attended a regular charter school, a mom and pop or an independent charter school, or if they would have attended their traditional public schools? And so this is a three-part analysis that allows us to bring to you performance information about your policies. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Yes, Dr. Schroeder.
Two questions. One, talk to us a little bit about the data that you'll be using. And then secondly, are you subject to some kind of a peer review, given that you're not part of the tenure track where folks get together and review? What sort of a review process does your research encounter?
So the first question is, what is the data that we're asking for? We ask for one piece of personally identified information that is actually de-identified. We ask for student demographic information, program participation in free lunch and special ed and English language learner programs. We ask for information about performance on Colorado accountability tests. And we ask for a student level identifier, which we ask the department to scramble before they give it to us. We were actually the creators of the scrambled ID back in 2005 when we realized that this was a way that we could increase the level of security and privacy of the records that we were obtaining. We at our place blend in information from the Common Core of data. This is a publicly available data set through the U.S. Department that explains school level aggregate profiles about the percentage of minority students, the percentage of special ed students, and so on. So we append publicly available information to each student's record to reflect the condition of the school in which they attend each year. And that's the data set that we hold, and we use a particular methodology called a virtual twin, in which we identify kids who look exactly like each charter school student who go to traditional public schools that those specific students would have otherwise attended had they not gone to their charter school. So we then have a twin program, and we do our study based on that. You asked me about peer review. We actually have four levels of peer review. One, our work is entirely self-funded. The university does not contribute to our operating budget. So the first level of peer review is, can we get any of our projects funded by people? The second level of peer review is that we ask our colleagues in school reform fields if they will, under contract, review our work before we release it. Three, each of our data agreements requires that we provide our reports in advance of release to our state partners so that they can review it, and some of them are pretty tough. And finally, we have the review of all of the entire world of academics after we release a report, and that's why we want to hold the data set for 12 months so that we can answer those requests. We actually think that our peer review process is tougher than finding a journal who loves you and constantly submitting your journal articles to them.
Thank you, question.
Dr. Flores?
So are you saying that the Common Core tests that are given, that the U.S. Department of Education gives you the data?
No, ma'am, not at all. I don't even believe they collect it. No, that's the information that we're asking the state of Colorado to provide us. What we get from the State Department of Education is a school descriptor file. Remember that if we're using test data, we're only collecting data on students who are tested. So we don't get K through 2, and we don't get several grades in high school. What we're getting from the U.S. Department is a profile of all of the students in the school at the school level, completely aggregated up, no performance data. So the school record from the U.S. Department is, here's the school, what percentage of the students in the school are minority grouped, how many have English language challenges, how many are reported as having special ed. These are data that you have reported to the U.S. Department, and they just create an aggregate data set across the country that
but
we use.
But you are using the Common Core as a measure that is...
Our outcome variable is how much academic progress does a student achieve in a year, how much progress do they make, in our treatment condition, which in this case is enrolled in CMOs, versus other conditions, charter schools or traditional public schools.
And you're giving all this credit to a test that is on the line as far as credibility. I mean, couldn't you use another measure other than Common Core test, the PARC test?
So for all of its flaws, it has the advantage of being a universal test that all students in the state take. And it has the advantage that it is a consistent and reliable measure over time. That's not to say it's perfect, but it has those advantages. And since we're doing a twin study, remember, every single time we have a, in this case, a charter school student and their control twin, they both have the same disadvantage with your instrument. So while it might not be perfect, it might not be perfect, but it's the same condition for both of them.
I'd wait around for another test.
Dr. Scheffel.
Hi. Hi. So you're saying you've been a valued partner since for 8 years, right?
Yes,
so does this like recreate the extension of the partnership, or how does that work? I mean, how did the partnership get established 8 years ago? Did it go through IRB and then now it's gone through? I mean, tell me what we're doing since the 8-year partnership.
Well, please don't take this wrong, but every single time we've approached the department, there's been a new process.
Right.
And for good reason, the process has become more structured and standardized and rigorous over time. What I can say is that we only ask for the opportunity to work with you when there is a project that we think could provide you valuable information. And we've had a number of projects over the years that we thought would be valuable to partner with you on.
And so when I look at the report that you attached in our board docs, does that summarize the things that have been published since 2008? Or
to be honest, I don't remember. No, ma'am, it does not. I can do that for you, though, if you'd like.
I was just wondering what came out of the partnership that's been ongoing for 8 years.
Sure.
Maybe you could just speak to it.
Sure. So we have focused our work with Colorado exclusively on charter school matters so far. We are looking at, we have looked at what happens when charter schools open up and grow for the first 5 years. Can we find early indicators of school quality early in the life cycle of a school, and how much does that predict future performance? The second one was a CMO study that we did in 2012, I believe. We were lucky to include you in our last national study of charter school performance, where Colorado did pretty well. We included the city of Denver in an urban charter school analysis that was released in 2015.
Okay, thank you. And then can you speak to the data elements that you'd be requesting? I did see kind of a list, but I don't think it was comprehensive.
Sure.
The data elements.
Sure. So we are looking for gender, grade, whether they're in the particular school year, they're repeating that grade. Thank you very much. Their eligibility for free and reduced price lunch, their English language learner status, whether they are in need of special education services, whether they are, did I say gender? I can't remember. Did I say gender? Okay, sorry. Their race, ethnicity, their performance on the state accountability tests, and I think I've done it all, haven't I? I think so, yeah. Oh, and the school that they attend in that particular year, the school.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Rankin?
I just have a quick question. When we talk about the virtual twin, how do you control for the fact that the parents choose the school as opposed to public?
I don't know that we have enough time on the docket today to go into that in depth, but so I have a couple of points about this. We use the starting score of a student, their baseline school performance, And as we know, achievement includes a lot of different things, which is why we don't use achievement as our outcome variable, right? We use academic progress, and you know that as being a leader in growth modeling. But that academic achievement score includes not only their past academic experience, but also a lot about their family endowments. So when we match students, we match them on their starting score, and so there is a degree of composite there about what the family thinks about education in the value that they've given schools in the past. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I have lots more to say about that if you'd like to ask me again.
If we have a couple days, we can sit down and chat.
Next time.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I just had one more question. I was just looking at the conclusion for this report. If you could tie it back to the methodology, I don't know if it's possible. We may not have time. But it just talks about the scenarios. And I don't know if that's part of the match twin approach, but it says the purpose of the scenarios is not to advocate for a particular approach, rather make obvious the fact that the impact on quality that accompanies closure, I think, of a charter is more dramatic and enduring than efforts to improve the current stock of schools. A glimpse of what the future holds provided by these scenarios should quicken the resolve to use closure policies where charter schools are clearly underperforming, and so forth. Could you link that conclusion back to your methodology with the matched twins?
Sure. So there's actually no connection at all between these simulations and the results of the study. This is the 2013 National Charter School Study. And what we learned in the 2013 study that we had not yet known was that the charter sector as a sector gets better not because schools get better, but because policy actors get better about the decisions that they make. So what we were saying was there's a long left tail of performance of low-performing charter schools across the country. And if there were better policy decisions about how to treat underperforming charter schools, you would move the whole distribution up to the right. And so these scenarios give you five different hypothetical ways of moving on low-performing charter schools. Scenario A, B, C, D, and E. And so it has nothing to do with the school performance, the methodology itself. It just says if you removed schools using this criterion, this is how much the distribution would shift. If you got more stringent, this is what the distribution would shift like. And so that's what this is. Am I being clear?
Yes, thank you.
And scenarios are not case studies?
No, they're not. They're just completely hypothetical. We just said we can see the distribution of school performance across our national study. If we said, let's use a decision that anybody who is worse than some absolute level of achievement, this is one of the scenarios. If you were worse than 80% of the schools, if we just said you're in the bottom 20% and we're going to close you if you're a charter school, what would the impact on the aggregate performance of all the rest of the schools be? How would you move the distribution? And then let's look at another scenario. Maybe the other one was you have to be worse than the local option by a certain amount.